Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I forgot to say Happy New Year's last few episodes, so happy 2018 here. We'll bring this camera down a little bit. I never adjust my stuff, but when I took it to the smoke shop, I had to move things around a little bit. Alrighty, today is going to be a subject that I've mentioned just briefly in a couple sentences and out of the 250 episodes that are out there. But today we're going to hone in big time as they spray my beautiful blue sky with a ton of chemtrails. As I watch a high altitude plane fly over those chemtrails and one fly under and no one has a trail. I think I'm going to call this lottery lives. And what that means is that people will base their lives off of lottery ticket odds all the time. And in Southern California, it is so prevalent because people want to dream, right? When you want something really, really bad, you've got to, and it's difficult to get, I should say. When you want something really, really bad, sometimes you have to play games with yourself in order to get it if that goal is very hard to get. And so you do play a certain level of games with yourself. But there becomes a point when you cross the threshold where you are injuring your mind with what some people call blue sky, which is you're assuring yourself of something that isn't going to happen. I should say this: you're assuring yourself of something that's going to happen using rationales that will derail you off of your journey. I'll give you one that's not a lottery life / lottery ticket model, archetype. Some people think that opportunities come to them willy-nilly out of thin air. Some people understand that you have to create opportunity, right? You have to talk to people. And once you talk to people, you'll find someone that will give you the opportunity. But if you don't get off your ass, you're never going to get it, right? And so some people will sit around telling themselves that, I don't know, God's going to make the phone ring. And it's not that doesn't happen, but that's more of a lucky situation. And that's what this is all about, is that people cannibalize situations from other people's lives that are one-offs. There's a ton of webinars and YouTube ads that start off with a lottery ticket model, and I want to kill it. And I want you to say, oh, you know, you're talking about the lottery ticket model of life, right? If you have kids, you have to make sure that when they start spewing this crap, and they will, unless you sit them down ahead of time and tell them, they will absolutely bring you a lottery ticket win scenario. And I'm going to explain this in great detail, because it's important that we take this out of our own lives, right? Now, probably quite a few of you are hip to this, but this is going to be a good refresher course, right? Back in the 80s and 90s, there was a lot of 1-800 number sort of correspondence courses you could take online, buying big cassette tape courses with books, and you know, they would spread it all over a table. It looked so cool, and it would teach you how to sell real estate. And I'm not saying that all of them are bad. I'm not saying any of them are bad necessarily. But the way that they'll sell it to you inside the infomercial is they will take you through case study after case study of people who've used the course and who've made a ton of money. Now, in some cases, there's been some people that were busted for loading those first customers, those first students with deals. They knew exactly where to purchase. They knew exactly how to move the money. They even provided the investment money and then gave the profit to the couple or the individual such that they could report on a commercial without telling a lie that they had made X number of dollars from a particular deal. Okay. Now, a lot of people who sell and buy or buy and sell real estate, it does work, but it's a hell of a lot of work. It is a hell of a lot of work. One of my best friends in the entire world, brother from another mother, he's an expert at this, and I'm telling you, he's up at 4:30 in the morning using the MLS list and going out there and scouting all the homes and checking out, you know, the neighbors and seeing if it's quiet at night, checking out the cars to see if they're, you know, messed up or not, looking up police records in the area, making sure it's a good place to buy a home and flip it. And that's before he even goes in. That's before he sits on the steps and does a bid for it, an auction for it, right? So what this is about is the opposite of that. The opposite of working hard. The opposite of accepting the fact that life is difficult. Okay? I just ran into this in my personal life today, in the last 12 hours, which is why I'm sitting there. I'm getting triggered to make this episode because it's very near and dear to me. And the second you explain it to someone, they usually pull out pretty quickly. Okay? But the one I'm going to crescendo with is the one that happened today because it was classic. Classic. And I didn't have any resistance necessarily for my advice. It was just, I had to give it, right? Now, the reason why I think it's very common with where I am today is because no matter where you are in Los Angeles, you are typically going after some outrageous dream. Whether or not you admit it to anyone or not, you know, there's people who want to be actors and directors and they want to be, you know, real estate moguls. They want to drive the Lamborghini. They want to have the house on the hill, all that good stuff. And the thing is they realize it's tough eventually, you know, and they will not want to accept the fact that the people that are there, because you can drive right down to the beach. Just get in your car. I could get in my car right now and drive right down to Newport and drive all the way to San Clemente, San Juan Capistrano, and just look down the hill. About this time of day, all the garage doors start opening up, and there'll be a Bentley next to an Aventador Lamborghini, right? And the kid's got some, you know, rotted out BMW, right? And so those people exist. And then you just see the next house, the next house, the next house, and they're all full of these amazing cars. They're all doing the big keeping up appearances thing, right? Keeping up with the Joneses. And so you look at it and you think to yourself, this is crazy. They've got it. There's dozens of them here. There's hundreds of them here. Go up in the hills. It's just a different type of rich person up in the hills. And you start to ask yourself, well, where did all this money come from? Man, it must be easy to make this kind of money. If you just live in this area, it must be easy. Not realizing that probably a good 25 to 30% of the people who live down here made their money someplace else and decided to move here once they got to the point they could live anywhere they wanted to in the world. I know some people that got here in their 60s and they're just trying to have fun for the last years of their life, you know. They're exercising, they're walking up and down the beach now because they have something to live for, right? But then I come down and I hang out with some of my buddies and my acquaintances, and we'll be having a drink or something, or we're eating some dinner, or we're just smoking cigars. And I start to hear the lottery ticket model. Because it goes around, what are you doing? What's up with you, man? Yeah, how's your business doing? Whatever. I'm pretty straightforward. You know, I'm pretty much like, hey, this is going well over here. This investor's a dick over here. This guy's a backstabber. But this one's great. This guy's amazing, honorable. We're making money right here. I got this other three things I'm working on over here that I totally control. And so I'm pretty straightforward because I don't have any love for delusions. They don't work. You know, they just don't work. But then I'll start hearing these amazing stories from some of my friends, right? More of the acquaintances, my close friends know the game. But it's usually like a 1-2-3 punch and they're going to be rich, right? And they're usually, one of the big things is to get into a market late, but feel like you're getting into it when it's in its peak, because the people selling it to you have already got in and they want out, right? But they know how to resell the package to get a bunch of people in, right? My hometown got had with emus, the ostrich thing that's a little bit different than an ostrich, because emu meat's actually really delicious and wonderful. And they tried to do the emu farm thing in the middle of Kansas. And I don't know what happened, but it was happening just as I was leaving in 1987. And I remember driving by some of these kind of pastures with these emus running around. And then it just died off. It just went away. Within the first 5 years of me returning back to my hometown, all gone. So someone said something about the weather not being right for them or whatever. I mean, we have horrible winters and really hot summers, so go figure, right? The idea was that people are going to buy these emus and succeed. And how did they get convinced to buy something they totally don't understand, right? I don't know if emus come directly from Australia or some other place in the world, but they are not native to the Midwest of the United States of America that I'm aware of. But the salesman does the salesman thing. They tell you about someone who is making a tremendous amount of money. Perhaps they give you two. Or a dozen. And it seems to make sense. Well, Marge, you know, I have to say, they said that this group of folks I don't even know are making a tremendous amount of money off these emu things. I think we should consider this. We've got land not doing anything. Let's do this, right? There's been this ad going around YouTube recently, which just really calls out this entire formula. And it starts off with, like, some douchebag, and yes, we're going to call him a douchebag, standing in some, you know, apartment door jam, and he's like, I'm going to tell you how this guy made $135,000 in 1 month. And then he made $500,000. He's got a picture of this guy, and he's circling these numbers. He's showing you some fucking metrics, some bullshit diagram of this guy's income. It's not attached to anything. All right, and he's like, well, you know, in the next 2 minutes and 5 seconds, I'm going to teach you this thing. And if you take my course for $9,000 or go to my webinar, he's selling you the guy who won the lottery ticket, right? And let's just go right into the why I say the lottery ticket thing, right? It's a little sketchy at the beginning of this episode, but it'll get better here. The idea is, if you were trying to make money and you picked up the newspaper and you read it online that someone won the lottery somewhere. We had one recently, a 20-year-old won $200 million or something here in the United States. They'll go, oh my God, you know how you want to make, you know how you make $200 million? You buy lottery tickets. That's what you do. And you run off and buy a bunch of lottery tickets and you buy them and you buy them and you buy them and you never freaking win because the odds are like 1 in 65 billion or something, right, that you're going to win. And by the way, if you want to do a little bit of math on your odds of winning the lottery, okay, here's what you do. You know, lottery tickets are made out of alphanumeric characters, right? 1 through 0. Usually now they're dual digits, right? So one column's going to be in the 60s, it'll be the 50s, 40s, whatever, right? So you have to figure out how many different combinations exist in slot 1, slot 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right? Then, let's just say there was 20 slots in each one of those rows. 20 different symbols that can exist that you get to pick from every one of the rows, right? And let's say there's, just to make it a little easier for our brains here, there's only 4 columns. Now, you know there's more than that, right? But here's how the math works. If there's 20 out of 4 rows, it's 20 times 19 times 18 times 17 to 1 that you're going to win with just a 4-slot ticket. It gets high really, really fast. And when you add a 5th and 6th and 7th column, it's insane. There's 26 letters in the alphabet. Plus, there's 10 digits in the base 10 counting system. That gets you 36 slots in one shot, man. But you don't run out and buy tickets after you start losing and losing and losing, right? You start to realize it doesn't work. You see these, you know, these homeless people buy scratch-offs, right? And there's people who aren't homeless who are addicted to scratch-offs, right? It's always a diminishing return. You always lose more money than you make. That's why those things exist. who the hell would make a scratch-off company where you paid out more than you raised? How was that? How would that even be possible? It's not possible. Okay? Now, you're more than welcome to buy these things and have fun with it as a fun entertainment thing. Get them for someone for their birthday or something fun like that. But it's not a mechanism to rule your life by, right? It's a mechanism of entertainment. And we all understand that if we win, it's like a eureka moment. It's like unbelievable odds that you won. And that's what's fun about it, right? There's nothing wrong with entertainment. But some people take that exact same thing and don't realize that that's what they're doing to their lives, because someone has told them a story about the one guy in your neighborhood who has had this miraculous success. And you're the next one. If you just participate, you're the next one, right? There are definitely members of my family at times who have... Well, let's put it this way. I've got members of my family, probably the vast majority of them, who understood... To build a business, it's a slow-going process. You have to get in. You probably lose a little money at first. Hopefully, in the first 24 months, you can turn a profit. And you keep going. I've done that, right? I've built video game companies where I was the CEO. I ran it. We made millions of dollars. It's fantastic, right? And I'll even use my example to you guys. But to finish up my family story... I've got other family members that got into selling Herbalife, right? If you're my age, you probably have some family members that did that too. In the Midwest, there's all kinds of products that come through, and they prey on the average intelligence of someone in the Midwest. I remember there was one that was a shampoo company. Hey, the shampoo was great, no problem. But where are you going to sell it? Really? You're going to go door to door and sell shampoo? The only way you make money selling shampoo is if you got a bunch of salons around you, or you have some gigantic artery to people that go to buy shampoo that aren't going to Walmart or the local grocery store, right? There was one that was a paint scratch repair kit thing. And, you know, that guy would come out and scratch his hood, and then he'd fill it in, and then he'd, you know, boy, it's just miraculous in front of him. Well, sure, I'll take the starter kit, you know? Now, I lecture... nearly every single month at a college about getting into the video game business. And what's really funny about it is that when I go talk to my buddies about getting into the video game business, everybody says it's screwed. It's over, man. The only ones that are going to ever make any money, and they usually don't, are these big giant companies like Blizzard or Activision or EA, right? But some of those big companies are losing... huge money every single month, millions and millions of dollars, because they're pushing brands that aren't making any money. There's too many platforms. You got PC, mobile, you have console, tablet, you're getting into virtual reality stuff now. There's just too many platforms, too many choices. You can't compile one game for a billion choices. And how many PCs are there? There's Mac and there's Windows. There's Xbox and PlayStation and the Wii thing. Right? You've got an HTC Vive, you've got an Oculus, you've got Android, you've got iOS, right? So last time I taught 2 years ago, my presentation was fairly cynical. Now, I always spin it up and say, look, you guys are the ones that are going to get this out of the dark ages. It needs to change. We need to go back into great games, not these big cinematic, you know, odysseys that look good but aren't any fun, right? But then the school came to me and said, well, you know, we are trying to sell this as a course. Could you please be a little more positive about this, right? And of course, for me, I'm sitting there going, geez, I don't mislead people no matter what. You know, there's no money in teaching, I'll tell you that much. But now take my scenario with my video game company. Now, at the beginning, we paid ourselves a pittance, right? I managed to sign a few $100,000 with the contracts that kind of got us through. You know, before that, we were making nothing, like $5,000 a month. We formed our company, signed a deal, and we made $50,000 in a month. That was pretty good. Next deal up was $300,000, roughly. But it took 2 years, before it really started to blow up. In fact, I'll even go up 3 years. At the third year, I was depositing over $500,000 in the bank a month. Not to my bank account, but to my company's bank account. We had 29 employees, so don't get all excited about my bank account. But what if I had told someone that? And they ran off and said, hey, let's say I have an average conversation with someone who wants to get in the video game business. Because every kid that plays a video game instantaneously wants to be in the video game business. Doesn't matter if they have any skills whatsoever. Right? You say, well, you're going to have to do something when you get in the company. Well, I'm going to be a game designer. Yeah, and I just want to be fucking Steven Spielberg on the first day at the studio. But if I said, yeah, you know, I just deposited a check for, you know, $480,000, and we already have another $120,000 coming in from a different source. It's being deposited in my north office. Okay. Kid runs off and tells his mom, his dad, oh my God, you know I can make $500,000 a month, mom and dad? Well, how's that, son? Well, I know a guy who has his own game company. You know, he just started it right here inside of his living room. Took him a year to get an office. Then he opened up a second office. And you know what? He deposits this kind of money. Yeah. Just happened just like that, man. Nobody worked their asses off. No one negotiated with CTOs all around the world. Getting, you know, one deal higher than the other, saving projects that went on the fritz, you know, because they couldn't figure out something. I can say I've never had, I think my game company was extremely successful. I mean, we replaced every casual online gaming platform / MMO casual platform that was of any notoriety. We did them all. And then we sort of exhausted ourselves from all of our clients. And then, of course, 2008 happened. In November, December, and one by one, you know, the clients started disappearing, right? Well, we were highly successful, but it still took months and months and months to close deals, right? And that's reality. That is reality. But now, there are two forms of this formula, okay? There's someone giving you those scenarios like I just gave you. Oh, you know, my buddy made him. I heard on, read on the radio, read on the, you know, the internets that somebody's making a gazillion dollars. I saw a webinar, I saw a YouTube ad, and he's promising me this and that and this. You know, I had a friend of mine, a childhood friend, he's like 12 years old, and he saw Ed McMahon's whole thing about when he used to do the old, I forgot what the hell they called it, but he mailed you this catalog and you apply and you could win all this stuff. And the kid was 12. So the endearing part about it was he thought, because he had read the material and he'd watched it on TV a couple times, his sweepstakes thing, that's what it was. And he literally sat there and told us, you know, well, I'm probably going to at least win like a VCR or something, right? He just thought the win was going to be a guarantee. And what's cute and endearing about a 12-year-old reading this is that he's a child, so it makes sense that he's having this, but he's being swayed because he has no cynical experience with how things work. He doesn't understand a sweepstakes, what a sweepstakes even is, right? But even at my age of 12, I was his good friend, and I was like, dude, do you not know how this works? No one wins anything, man. He's going to go to one person's doorstep, and that's about it. It was like an old school lottery, you know? But the other one, if you go up one level from selling shampoo and Avon and Mary Kay and all this stuff, right? I mean, there is no end to network marketing scams out there. You know, I've got friends who do nothing but live inside these things. And, you know, one of the big formulas is, I hate to say it, but you ladies out there that have a man that's pulling in, you know, most of the money, the women run off in these network marketing schemes because they can. They don't have to succeed. But the problem is that they become sort of these pseudo-authorities about how it works when they never make any money. They really don't make any money. They have to buy these starter kits. They have to constantly up stuff. And they don't make $0. But I've known one person who sold jewelry, then they sold jeans, and then it's just everything that they get into is a network marketing scheme, a multi-level marketing bunch of bullshit. And they just don't realize that, hey, if you had to survive on your own, you would be starving to death. So have fun with your little thing here, but don't recommend it to anybody who's really looking for an income. And what they always say as a scam in this shit is, This is to supplement your income. What if I told you out of your living room you could make $500 a day, right? Well, what's the pitch? $500 a day? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, if any of that crap worked, I would do it. I'd sit in my house and make $500 a day selling porcelain, you know, pugs or, you know, pewter army characters to guys, you know. It doesn't work because everyone would be doing it. Everyone would be doing it. The marketing material is telling you about a lottery ticket situation to coax you into it, okay? So let's go up one level to capitalism. For those of you out there who have an idea and you need to raise money to fulfill your business, I've, you know, if you watched all 250 episodes, you're going to hear a bit of a repeat, but you'd have to watch all of them to get all these sentences put together into one. You know, I have been an entrepreneur since I was a child. You know, like I said, I sold stuff at 7 years old, and I have sold stuff my entire freaking life, all the way up, either a product or a service, all the way up my entire life, right? So for me, I have this kind of, you know, I can smell the gold in the ground sort of thing. I can sense whether or not something's bullshit or not. I can sense when a company's going out of business. It's this weird thing, man. If I say you're done, you are done. No one's ever survived my instinct on that. And I don't necessarily have any pride on that, but that's just the way it is, right? And the worst thing is when you realize it's your company. So you got to raise some money. There's two sides to this. There's people who... there's like two or three sides to this. You can save up your own nest egg. I've got episodes way back in season one that nobody watches, but it's really good stuff about how to start your own business and what have you. A lot of amazing, you never hear this kind of stuff anywhere. I lecture about it if you come to my colleges, but you'd have to be taking a weird course to get it. But the best way to do it is obviously save up a nest egg so you can fund yourself for however long you're going to give this a try, right? And the golden minimum is 18 months. You need to have 18 months of all your bills. And that is a very hard thing to do in this crappy economy. For those of you in some successful, high-paying job, and if you haven't bought into consumerism, right, and conspicuous consumption, and you get a, you know, some $10,000 to $20,000 a month mortgage with some $2,000 with the car payments and all this bullshit you don't need on your credit cards. As long as you don't do that, you can do it. If you have a decent salary, it might take you a year to save up. But the best thing you have to do to get started is to go off and get your clients ahead of time and simply transition from taking the paycheck and filtering it through someone else's corporation where they're going to take the majority of the money and give you pittance, right? Today's episode word is pittance. And you transfer it to your bank account and you make all the money and you have to get your own health care and all this other stuff, get employees, buy supplies, perhaps get a brick and mortar store or at least a place to store your junk. Hopefully not. And you start logically, right? When I started my video game company, my buddy and I on the outside had just replaced games.com for Atari. You know, three dudes did all the work, right? We programmed 7 out of 8 of the games. We tripled their traffic. In fact, we maxed their traffic out and we tripled their revenue because they were having to lease the service from another company that was taking most of the money, 80% of the money. So we reprogrammed it and they got 100% of the cash. Not only that, but we then tripled the traffic and tripled the money. So we had this reputation. And so when the group broke up, from Atari and went to three different locations. I landed two of the three locations. The other guy went to go work for Walmart, so there wasn't anything we could sell that guy. But one of them went to Marvel, and the other one went to Yahoo Games. But it was so powerful. Our job on Games.com was so powerful that one of the women who was working at Atari jumped ship, and during an interview, just an interview on the way over to Yahoo Games, she got us a $55,000 gig. That's that one I told you about, the first one out of the chute. And then we landed Yahoo Games, right? And the other one went to Marvel. We did tons of Marvel games, right? So the idea is we built the company up with clients. We didn't have any money in the bank, and we sure as hell didn't want to wait to save it up. And where were we going to get the money to save it up? We were making barely enough to survive, right? I mean, I went from making $200,000 a year to making $5,000 a month. Okay, do the math on that one. I had money in the bank, of course, which floated me for about 2 years. But I lucked out with that. I worked my balls off at EA to get that money. But the opposite of that, now I just gave you the example of what you should do. Go get your clients first, transition out of the job, maybe even moonlight until you get it all iced down before you go and quit, because you don't have, you know, if you've never run your own business, you have no clue unless you've done your homework on how difficult that is. Because if you're the person in charge, there's barely enough time for you to do any work remaining in charge if you get any sort of staff, and someone's got to be landing new work. That's the other big one that people miss out on. Okay. I met a guy that wanted me to help. It's just a buddy of a buddy. He's an acquaintance at best. And he wanted me to help with a quick little website. You know, I'm programming video games and, you know, I could do websites. So big deal, right? So I was going to hook him up with some custom thing. WordPress was still not really in existence yet. So it was a kind of a custom job. He was going to start a termite company because this citrus termite thing was going to happen. It was about 2003. And so I sit down at this my buddy's restaurant, and we're starting to talk, and that's how I met the guy. He's like, hey, could you help my buddy out? I said, yeah, sure, whatever. And he said, do you have some clients? Do you do this kind of work? He said, no, I do pharmaceuticals. I sell pharmaceuticals. I said, oh, okay. So you don't have any clients? No. And I said, well, and then he goes to me, he goes, look, but I got the T-shirts, the magnet on the side of his truck, some hats, some business cards. And he's going to be getting the equipment. No clients. He's going to quit this, I don't know, $150,000 a year job with commissions, right? So I'm creating this website. I'm thinking, damn, I better get paid quick. Because as soon as this guy finds out, he's full of shit. And I try to give him some advice about getting clients ahead of time. He didn't want to take any of my advice. Put the website up. The dude quit almost instantaneously after quitting his big job. Problem was, he was in his late 40s, and getting that job back was going to be really difficult. He hadn't done manual labor in a really long time, and doing termite spraying, let me tell you, man, you know, he said it was in his family or something like that, but you don't start a job like that in your late 40s. It's too much physical effort, right? But he had bought a lottery ticket that this citrus stuff was the bomb, and it was going to be replacing all of the other, you know, more toxic chemicals, and they still use it to this day. For whatever reason, he couldn't get it to fly. You know, it'd be like me going off to be a tow truck driver all of a sudden, you know, at 48 years old. My back would protest profusely, I'm sure. But let's say you need to raise some money. This is where you can get ahead super duper fast. I'm going to give you some personal experience of my own. If you have a good idea, if you do, you're convinced you do. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing it, right? Doesn't mean it's real. A lot of people don't do what's called discovery, which is to go off and find out what the competition is, to find out if anyone's ever thought of your idea, and you'll waste a lot of money with investors. If you truly do have a great idea, then you're actually you're in a more dangerous place than you could possibly imagine talking to investors. Investors come in two different categories, and sadly, a large majority, I have no idea what the percentage is, they are scumbags and criminals. They typically have a very similar background, but they will do everything in their power to hide that background. So if you ever meet a person who claims to be an investor, one, don't tell them a fucking thing about what you're doing. Don't tell them anything. You know, maybe an industry. Well, we're in the game industry. That's all you're going to get to know. And then you put a glove on, and you make them bend over, and you go in, and you find out everything about them. Do a background check on them. Run their credit. Make them prove how much money they have in their bank. Because they will lie and lie and lie, right? Some of these guys have been rich in the past and lost all their money in like criminal enterprises, or they'll be in investments that go tits up and everyone's getting sued and tens of millions of dollars are up. Right? I recently worked with a guy like that. He was renting a room from somebody, right? He doesn't reveal that, of course, in the first year. Right, he only reveals that when he absolutely had to reveal it. Then we find out he's completely broke. Last investment cost his partners $40 million and people nearly went to jail. He lost all of his money in this venture. And they broke the law, was how they got there. Worked with another guy. Guy was the biggest, you know, self-congratulatory douchebag I've ever met in my fucking life, right? And the only reason why I gave the guy some time was that I had a partner that was saying we should give this guy a try. But he had no business background whatsoever, right? This guy bragged about Vietnam. I guess he went to Vietnam. Now, having been raised by at least three people that went to Vietnam and you know, saw the shit, they don't talk about Vietnam, ever. If you really saw the shit, you don't talk about it. You just don't. And the guys that run their mouth about it are the guys that are bullshitting about it. They are. Or unless they're nuts, you know, because they've been affected by it, right? And then we sit down and listen and help them get out of their PTSD, right? But this guy just told all these tales, all these stories about his life. And that's all he ever was a bunch of stories. He had this image in his mind that, one, he was an investor, and two, he was this big war hero. He didn't like the war. He didn't say it was good. He said it was stupid and we should never be there. So at least that part was true. But he was a fake investor. And we were told that he was going to be checked out by the other guy, who was also a fake investor, right? It's interesting. But the entire time I was sitting with this whole thing, kind of strapped down because I had this other partner that was locked into these other two guys, and without any business acumen, he couldn't smell bullshit if you stuffed it up his nostrils, right? I had to sit there for a year in this sort of intellectual prison of any common sense, right? Sitting there watching stupid thing after stupid thing happen. And just kind of going, well, you know, I think I'm going to be pulling out of this thing because it's just not worth my while, right? But how did they dupe my other partner? Blue Sky. Blue Sky, Blue Sky. Telling him they could raise money in 2 seconds. And what's really, really funny about it is that we spent basically about a year and a half. I spent 2 years in it. So did my first partner. But the last two guys spent between them a year and a half on one and a year on the other. Kept promising millions and millions of dollars. Millions and millions of dollars. Never, ever showed up. And the final play was that we got rid of the investor dude who was, we just finally figured out, had a bad record with all of his people, disreputable to the nines. And then the last guy that had already dragged my partner through another previous 2 years of some other venture I wasn't a part of, unable to raise any money, all of a sudden says, I can raise $10 million in 2 seconds. That guy bought it. I said goodbye. I said, see you later. Don't want to have anything to do with this. You're an abject fucking moron when it comes to business, right? Good luck, dude. Lottery ticket. The lottery ticket win. Someone else has done it. We can do it. Someone else has done it. You can do it, right? Now, one of the things that I've done since I've been in Los Angeles is I've been very privileged to bump into some incredibly talented people that when they met me, they said, look, you are going to be our manager. I mean, it would be, in one case, I met someone, these two comedians, and I think it was in the first week, the older brother or the older cousin, I think, of the two, he just came up to me and said, you're going to be our manager, just out of thin air. And I said, okay. I never done this before, but I'm sure we can work it out. You know, the video game business has to deal with all kinds of different management of talent and what have you. So I've seen it from the other receiving side of it. So I'm going to get behind the curtain now, right? And it worked out great. We had all these great things that happened. Got them on television shows and we filmed them at a million places. And eventually they ended up with a permanent gig on cruise liners. But just with meeting these two guys and managing them, ended up bouncing around and meeting other people that said, you know, do you do management? I said, yeah, I do. You know, I've called them book comedians. You know, I've produced pilots. You know, I've done the filming, I've done the editing, I've done the show design, all kinds of stuff, right? So I've been very, very lucky with this whole thing. Again, this is part of the hard work, you know, true methodology of making successful things happen, right? You know, I've had the privilege of, you know, making really good friendships, and some of my clients slash friends have hit rough spots, you know, where they might lose a family member, and then that kind of shocks them, and they don't go on stage anymore. and I've worked with comedians more than anything, but one of my really good friends, Jimmy Della Valle, great New York comedian, just an exceptional talent. He's been all over these shows, television shows. He lost his father. And I wasn't aware this even happened because he and I fell apart for like 3 months because I got busy, he got busy towards the end of the year. I knew his father was sick, but didn't realize he had passed, and it happened, and it got to him. And so we're talking about 3 months after it happened. I said, "What's going on, man? You know, where are you performing?" He says, "Well, I'm not performing right now." I said, "What do you mean you're not performing right now? What are you doing?" He says, "Well, you know, I manage various entertainment things." I said, "Well, you need to get back on stage." He says, "Yeah, I know." He says, "My problem." I said, "What's the problem?" And he goes, "Well, my father and mother." He says, "Well, a ton of my jokes are about my parents. They're really endearing, wonderful jokes about his parents, right?" And he goes, "I can't get on stage and say those jokes right now. It's just too soon. It hurts too much." I said, "Well, you know what?" I said, "You're one of the most brilliant comedians I've ever met. Let's write some new stuff." By me saying "let's," it's basically you do it and you try to make me laugh. And we'll adjust everything, right? And he doesn't need any of my help whatsoever. And he just kind of paused, you know. And I said, "Where can we get you on stage? Because we have all these other places he's been on stage." And he said, "Well, maybe I'll go over to John Lovett's place up in the Universal Studios little amusement park they got up there. And it's kind of a open mic night constantly. There's no admission. You just come in and sit down and have drinks, and comedians just constantly do it." I said, "Okay, let's do it." So my girlfriend at the time and his wife, we all went up there. I met, and he lets all these guys go on, and they're doing pretty good. You know, it's open mic night. Of course, my guy is a closer. My guy's a two-hour closer, man. He's just invincible. He can do 30 minutes to 2 hours just because, right? He gets up there and does really, of course, he blows it away. Everyone freaks out. He likes going after everyone if it's non-regimented, because he tries to find out what the crowd likes. Are they a little dirty? Are they straight-laced? What have you? So he gets out there and just nails it. And then we start working together again. And he's getting into voiceover. And so we work to get his voiceover online so people can hear it, you know. And I'm just helping to kind of keep him going. And we're talking a lot. And I'm meeting him at his house. And we're going through material. And he eventually got so back on track that within the year he had a VH1 special. Okay. Now, there's a point to me telling you all this information. I'm not just trying to blow my own whistle here. He gets on stage at his VH1 special, which we filmed twice because the first one was kind of weird. But during the first one, he stops in the middle of the act and he says, "I just want to say thank you to somebody, because without him, I wouldn't be standing here." And he just points right at me and he says, "I wasn't on stage. My father had died. I couldn't use a bunch of my material, or I was uncomfortable with it." And he goes, "But what I didn't tell my friend was that my father's last words to me was to get back on stage. And he sent my buddy to get me back on stage." I was blown away. And he continued to do that little introduction. You know, like if he introduced me in front of people for several events after that, he was like, "This is the guy. This is the guy that got me back in." And I, you know, that's something I would do that I've never had someone return such a kind, gracious gesture. Amazing. Now, I've also worked with very famous, legendary film writers, directors, special effects guys, like I've said. So I have probably a combined nearly 20 years experience doing this. Okay. And that doesn't count the 25 years of video game experience. I'm setting this up for the crescendo here. I recently had the situation where I'm helping some talent, various talent, you know, very young talent, kind of incubate up into a real career here in Hollywood. And there's some friends of mine in the Midwest that are just the sweetest, amazing people, the most talented freaking family. It's like the Jackson 5. Just one sibling after another is amazing. But two of them are really going for the gusto. And part of it is to try and figure out where the careers are here in Hollywood so they can get their groove on, right? Now, I've been through the machine. I've seen it all. I've been in film conferences in the exact room in 20th Century Fox where George Lucas and Steven Spielberg negotiated their first three or four films, all the Star Wars films. I've been offered Paramount Studios to work on film projects, for years. I've written my own stuff for famous celebrities. I've been in the machine. I've seen it. I know it works. I know it doesn't work. I've seen projects that were done that made people legends in 1982, and I watched, I met them in this century, and then I went back and researched their entire career. Where did they go after that? What was successful? This guy doesn't seem to have any money and lives in a shack. This guy, can't seem to fall down. He's making hand over fist money. Highly respected in the industry, right? So now I'm helping this group of kids, and obviously I work with the parents the entire time. But there was an interesting, funny-ass thing, which was how to manage... Well, where should the kids go? Should the kids focus more on social media? Or should they focus on going to college and getting film degrees? Or whatever it is that turns them on, right? And they were given a text message from one of the fellow kids that's doing really well on YouTube. And it was the most epitifying example of the lottery ticket win business model. And in the text message it said, "I once made $100,000 in a month off my YouTube channel." Now, I personally don't even know how that's possible. I mean, you get a fraction of a freaking penny anytime one of these things gets viewed, okay? But the kid said, and again, it's unverified by anything, it's just a claim. But then the next thing he said was, that was the last time it ever happened. It went down from there. This is like an 18-year-old kid, maybe 19 tops, giving advice to this family in the Midwest. Now, what do you think the family in the Midwest wants to hear? My version of reality, which is your kid needs to really focus, needs to become a professional, increase the scope of the talents, and increase the scope of range of those talents. So if you want to be a comedian, you got to learn how to figure out what kind of comedian you are. If you want to be a nice, sort of Jay Leno comedian that never swears, you're going to have to be really funny at that. You got to write your own material. You got to test it out and do it. If you're going to do skits and sketch comedy, you need to get inside of a comedy troupe and see if you can do it, right? If you want to be a dancer, well, you're going to have to figure out how to count down dance moves. You just are, right? For anyone wanting to get into film, you got to go to film school. You need to go to film school. Today, it is too complex to go in and just learn it. If you had a parent that was in this, if you're James Cameron's kid or grandchild, yeah, sure, grandpa's going to teach you everything, but you're going to get that film school equivalent education. So I get this copy of this text message, and I was kind of like, well, that's great. But, a heartthrob on YouTube only probably has like a 5-year lifespan, right? Go ask Justin Bieber how many 12-year-old girls are throwing their panties on stage anymore, right? When he was 14, it made sense. They're seeing someone they could marry. I mean, really, in real life. 2 years ahead, no big deal, right? This kid is in decline mode. He will never, ever be on top again in his life. Will he continue to perform and make tens of millions of dollars? Sure. But he's going to be entertaining little girls who are now older, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, when he's in his 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, and all anyone's trying to do is recreate their childhood. Anyone who sees Bret Michaels perform is not going for super-duper music quality. They're going to recreate the 80s, right? If you ever saw Poison, it's not because you're looking for really original rock tunes. You're looking for your childhood, right? And there's nothing wrong with that, okay? It's just you can't build a whole life on that. That's why Bret Michaels does a bunch of shows on TV. He needs supplementary income, all right? He probably came out a lot sweeter than a lot of these folks, and hopefully he's invested his money well. I met the guy. He's an absolute, total sweetheart. And let me tell you, if there's one dude in this industry, in the rock industry, that takes care of his fans, Bret Michaels is number one on my list. This dude is amazing. Other rockers hate him because he's so successful at it, too. It's really funny. But when it comes down to the math of what I just experienced, it's really funny. People are going for what they want to hear, right? It's their own version of the lottery ticket. Well, this one seems a lot easier. If I say, have you read any reports on the decline of social media? Nope. Okay. How old do you think your kid can be before they're not going to be grabbing the kids that are sitting on their phones all day pounding through YouTube videos? No clue, right? So my thought process is based on my experience. You know, I've seen the greatest stand-up comedians, you know, they can't get anyone to come to see them. And all of a sudden something turns around, you know. I hid this woman's name because she was going through a lot of crap at the time, but I saw Leslie Jones, which some people don't like, but I think she's an absolutely brilliant human being. She opened for Cat Williams. I was really watching Cat Williams shows on Netflix, and Leslie opened for him on this special, and I was like, where is this woman? How come I've never seen her? You know, I used to go to the Melrose Improv, you know, a couple times a month for years. Never saw her come through. And so I quickly looked her up on my sofa, looked up her website. It was 1999, that last time she had it updated. I think this was like 2011. It hadn't been updated for over 10 years. And so I sent her an email and I said, hey, what's up? I take care of celebrities from time to time. I rarely charge any money. I just do it because I believe in people. I said, what's going on with you? She instantaneously emails me back because she wasn't famous yet, right? I said, well, let's get you on track. I said, I'm going to build a site. Let me have access to your domain so we can point it to my server. I'll back up what you got, then I'll put something up there really nice. And within 2 or 3 days, I had her whole thing worked out. And she had a VH1 special on DVD, but no one knew it existed because the site didn't have it and she had no representation, right? I went and attended one of her performances. I did a bunch of promotional stuff for her. I should say everything I could, everything that she had going. She used to throw these really big birthday bashes with all these comedians from Mad TV. She was totally hooked up. And she's aggressive. She's like this 6-foot-plus, African-American woman. And she's just a tour de force in real life. Amazing, right? Plus a huge sweetheart, right? And so we just kept pushing and pushing and changing and pushing. And it was just a tiny little nudge for me. Not that much. Just got her looking decent online. Got her some good promotional stuff. Looked like she had some money behind her. She goes bouncing around. She went from, barely being able to probably pay rent. I mean, this is kind of the things that she communicated with me, Tom, which I can say now because she's not having any problem paying her bills now. And she gets one of the head writing jobs at Saturday Night Live. Just out of thin air. Boom. And she's had some unfortunate experiences over the last couple of years, but I think that's all settled down now, right? I don't even know if you guys know, but she got hacked pretty bad a couple times. And, I had agents blowing up my phone thinking that I was still hosting her website, which I wasn't. Someone had actually put up a website on her domain, having stolen her phone, gotten her GoDaddy information, probably used a trial account, put up these horrible websites with all her personal data up there. And, they were pounding. She's emailing me 2 seconds, she's really upset and I'm trying to calm her down. The more I tried to calm her down, the more she got pissed off at me. And I said, look, you're emailing me to take down your website and I just need to hear your voice. Just call me and say, take it down and hang up the phone so I can verify it's you, because I could be getting hacked right now. This could not be you. And then finally she yelled at me with enough information about our background together that I knew, okay, no one would know that except for her. And so I took it down right away. But she's a perfect example of someone who didn't buy the lottery ticket. She worked her ass off. And lover or hater, she worked her ass off. Now she does, Farmers Insurance commercials, I think, and she does all kinds of stuff. She's in movies, and people don't like the new Ghostbusters. I doubt I would like it either. I never saw it. That's a franchise you don't touch. I don't care who redoes it. These remakes are obviously awful. But the point of this, and this is sort of a meandering around thing, but hopefully it's entertaining and informative. The idea is, you need to think about the lottery ticket. Find out in your life if you are selling yourself on someone's one in a million chance. to succeed. I have a big philosophy in life, and it has to do with being able to replicate perfection, which kind of lightly ties into this. And the idea is that anyone can slip and create something wonderful once. And I hope that happens to each and every one of you. And I hope some of you have already experienced that. But ask anyone who's had a top 10 hit or a number one hit if it was easy to write the second one. If you can put one up there again and again. That's why Michael Jackson and Prince and all these amazing musicians are so amazing, because they could do it over and over and over again, right? There's no pie in the sky. There's no lottery ticket model. Now, you understand that. Don't need to say much more about that. So let's just take a little second here before I close this off to really talk about what can happen. Because you do need to have something to inspire you to go do it. How many times have we benefited from someone selling themselves a line of crap? I don't know what music you like, but if you've ever obsessed on a particular band or a particular band member, and you said, you've heard them have the interview, and they've said, the question is, well, what made you do this? Why'd you get in the business? And you'll have these guys say, well, I wanted money and chicks. And that's why they got in. And there are hundreds of albums and dozens and dozens of songs that are part of our life because they sold themselves such a pie-in-the-sky dream, necessarily, right? That's a lot different than saying, well, I saw everyone else doing it, so I thought for sure I could succeed. Every time you used to watch American Idol back in the day, when the first two or three seasons, which were just unbelievable, right? The legendary bad auditions, entertained us for a decade after, She bang, right? What they sold themselves in a bad audition, usually, is someone who sold themselves the fame game. They sold themselves something not based on any talent. They never recorded their voice and played it back, or they're so tone deaf they can't tell the difference. They don't have anyone in the family that has any experience. No one was being realistic with them, right? Someone sent them a text message and they jumped on board and completely derailed their lives, right? We do have to find ways to inspire ourselves. And I would say the threshold in the sand, okay, and in your mind that is going to go from probably fairly healthy thinking to not so healthy thinking is this mechanism of anything that you rationalize that takes away your dedication and makes you lazy because you think it's a sure thing because someone else has seemingly done it without putting much work into it. Elvis Presley is probably one of the greatest examples of someone that literally fell uphill. Now, he had a natural talent to sing. He was a handsome bloke, and he knew how to dance. For 1955 up, he knew how to dance. He knew how to shake his hips, right? So he wasn't talentless by any stretch. He never wrote any of his lyrics, by the way, but he just picked up these old blues tunes from probably down south, from the black folks that had written most of those riffs, and they sanitized it up to a white guy because they knew that that would sell more records, and he was the right place at the right time, recorded a single, and kaboom, he was off to the races. But he also was, the king of what he did. I guess you could call it rock and roll. We don't consider 50s music rock and roll today, but it is. It is the 50s rock. So he's the king of rock. Michael's the king of pop, right? And Prince was a Greek god. Sometimes you have that much talent, right? Prince said in Baby, I'm a Star, he said, one of the lyrics, when you got a baby, nothing comes too hard. I've said that before in an episode. Extremely important thing, but how do you get it, right? Go look up YouTube videos about Prince. And, a lot of the interviews with his ex-bandmates after he passed, there's a channel out there called Jamie Star News, if you happen to like Prince. But even if you just want to go on the little journey that with me, go listen to some of those interviews, because Prince worked around the clock, 24/7. He just so happened to biologically not need a lot of sleep. And I think, you know, towards the end of his life, he may have used stimulants to keep that going in his 40s and 50s. But way before that, he was just a natural high kind of guy, right? Practicing guitars for 8 hours straight, if not 12 hours straight, staying up, playing all the instruments, working out a song, mixing it all down himself, turning in his own album, right? We need to be like that. Because a lot of times what will end up happening with your career and with your life is that you, if you do it right, in my opinion, or I say one of the very successful ways of doing it, is that you sell yourself on a very large investment. It's going to take me 1,000 hours to figure out how to do that really well. What ends up happening is you don't really need 1,000 hours, but you won't know until you find out you don't need 1,000 hours, and then you can cut it short and you'll succeed at 200 hours. You'll find out you have a lot of talent. You'll find out actually things don't take a lot to learn the basics and get kind of dangerous with it, right? I took one music class in college. I had probably written at least one album of instrumental music before that. And it was just, I learned how to read music by programming my own synthesizer as a kid in my teens. And in order to, I did rig up the keyboard so I could actually play a keyboard on the keys on my computer, but I eventually bought a synthesizer very shortly after I wrote this program. But in order to test my software, I would take sheet music and translate every note down into the notes inside the software so it saved the score. And I'd play it back, and it sounded like crap. It's like a Nintendo game playing it back to me, but that's the way I confirmed it worked. And that's how I kind of learned to read sheet music. Never ever learned how to read it fluently, right? The people who can do that, hats off, man. But after that one class, which this jerk-off gave me an F, I had to drive 30 minutes to school every single day. One day it was really, really backed up due to some accidents on the 280 up in the Bay Area, which if you've ever driven that, you'll know what I'm talking about. I think it was even like a fatality. And I told the guy, I said, look, man, the traffic was jammed. It was my final exam, and I played it perfectly, right, on a piano. He sat there, listened to me, didn't have the balls to tell me he was going to fail me. What a jerk off. I just got that off my chest. There you go. But after that, I wrote, you know, several tracks for video games. I wrote them for private projects. I would write full soundtracks for corporate demos that I was doing. So I'd program and animate it in 3D and then write the soundtrack for it and turn it in. So I learned enough to get dangerous, to make some money, to actually do it professionally a couple times, right? And so you can get in and make things happen without a tremendous investment. And the reason why I tell you these stories is because if you're drawn to the lottery ticket model because reality is scaring the crap out of you, let me take a little bit of steam out of the reality for a second and just say, look, maybe you will need the full 1,000 hours. Okay. It will break. There'll be a point where you play a guitar and it sounds like crap for a really long time. At least a long time to you. Depending on how old you are, time moves a little faster or slower, right? But eventually, if you keep playing, it just happens. First time I recorded a guitar solo, I'd never done a guitar solo in my life. And I had just played the guitar so much every single day. Crap, right? That eventually, and I only played solo stuff. Chords, that's easy, transition, boom, 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 or easy-ish. But there got to be a point where I learned the neck of a guitar, and my brain wanting to express itself in the guitar was completely natural. I didn't know, to this day, I have no idea what notes I was playing, but when I played it, I got through all different types of techniques, playing the neck and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. My first solo, I played it for a buddy of mine who's a guitar player, and he's like, how long have you been playing guitar? And I said, well, just been fiddling around with it, you know. He said, that was really excellent. You know, I can't believe you just played that. And I was like, well, it just happened. He goes, well, you know what? That's how it works. You get into an instrument enough, you just become the instrument. And that's really it is for everything. If you're into dance, well, you'll just organically pull it out of your body because the music is demanding you move a certain way, right? For those of you who can dance, you know, that's how you dance. And the people who can't dance, they're trying to break dance into like some mechanical execution, right? That's why line dancing makes me want to barf, right? You're not dancing. You're being a robot. You're just one, two, three. You know, it's like, whatever. If it's entertaining to you, that's great. But I'm just saying, you're not dancing. I'm just telling you. I want you to succeed. I really, really do. Because, you know, the motto of this show is to rebuild society from the bottom up. Right? Yeah, you know, I corrected myself. We're not trying to build a pyramid again, but we're trying to build society from the guttural talents and the guttural cause and effect models that create happiness in every human being on planet Earth, right? And it doesn't matter what the hell you do. Accounting could confuse you and confuse you. Statistics, take statistics and or calculus in college and wait till you, you know, if you blaze through that, you're a special human being. But if you fail the first time, welcome to the club, you know, and then you might go through again and get an A+. It just clicks, right? My dad took calculus twice, one as a young man, one as a guy in his late 30s, and then he got his ass kicked. First time he took it in his late 30s, and then he just got pissed. He was like, I should know how to do this. Ice cream Chuck, yeah. But my dad's a very intelligent guy, brilliant dude, and he just, it was just a personal vendetta against calculus. He was just like, I'm going to get this, and finally, he told me the story a couple times, and it's just, I love it. It's one of the best stories I've ever heard about academic, you know, tenacity, and he said, it finally clicked. Not only did he ace calculus, but he aced statistics right after that, which has kind of a side probability you know, indicator on the side of statistics, right? I didn't get into calculus until I started programming things and I needed some calculus to do some certain, you know, type of trajectory work, some trigonometry as well. But I didn't get into statistics until I worked on EA.com. And here we are, we were spending $300 million on a big gaming platform. We try to sit down and figure out the statistical needs of handling 20 million consecutive players. And we just sat down and without taking the class, we started just doing statistics and we started just doing probability analysis. And right there in front of me, I had two other guys that were pretty good at it ahead of time. But eventually, just seeing it on the board made my brain go click. And that was it. Forever, I can do those calculations now, right? Based on all the factors, right? You can do it too. And whatever you love or whatever you need, you do it. And, you know, I'm going to close this up before I read out the bumper. I forgot what they call it. There's this phase in performers. If you ever perform on stage, I have sang several times on stage, and there's this out-of-body experience that happens. And a lot of folks, especially these actors like Johnny Depp, that say he's never watched any one of his movies all the way through, which I don't quite believe, because how do you go to a premiere of your own film? I guess you can sit in the back the whole time. But Elvis Presley used to get so absolutely nervous before he walked on stage, he'd forget all of his lyrics. I've had to sing live at, like, you know, rocker weddings, and you know, I'm trying to remember the song that I just learned to sing on the stage, and I can barely, you know, it's a song I never had heard before, and I'd had like 3 weeks to kind of prep for it. And you know, you get up to the point where you're like, okay, and I knocked out the first song really, really well. It came to the second song, the drummer kind of messed up the whole song, but you know, the lyrics were crazy, the timing was nuts, and it was just I believe the song is Custard Pie by Led Zeppelin. It's a really odd song, right? I got up there, and before I walked up, I had brain freeze, and my brain just went wipe. I don't remember any of the song. And I've been singing it hundreds of times before I got on stage, right? But when you get up there, there's something that happens to you. You have this out-of-body experience, and it all comes back to you. Once the music starts to play, all your Pavlovian triggers for what you know how to do, your muscle memory for whatever it is you're doing, kicks in. For anyone who's ever had a good comedic moment with your family members, or maybe you stand on stage, we got our buddy John V, he's a professional. You have these experiences where you go up there, and there's just this amazing thing that happens when you connect with an audience. And you get them to start laughing. And then any doubt you had that you're going to be able to pull this off over and over and over for an hour goes away. And you're in your zone. And then you get off the stage, relax, go to bed, get up the next day, and you'll look back at your performance and you'll say, how did I even do that? is that me? Do I really have this recessive talent in me? Thing is, it doesn't have to be a celebrity thing or you're, you know, performing on stage or anything. Anytime you do what you love, you're on stage. Anytime you create something, you're the people on stage, right? When you consume something, you're the people in the audience, right? As I've said in previous episodes, my hope for you is that you get a good chunk of time in the audience and you get a good chunk of time on stage and you take take turns. Easy for me to say. You take turns back and forth between the stage and the audience. And once you start framing what you do in life in these easy little metaphors, it starts to help you perform better. If you're a salesperson, all right, you go in a room. You know, if you've done it 100 times, it's just like Babe Ruth hitting a home run. But if you haven't done it 100 times, well, you're a little nervous the first couple times, right? How many times have you had to have a difficult conversation with someone? And you don't know what you're going to say. But you slow yourself down so you don't go nuts in the room. And you go in there, and for whatever reason, every perfect thing you could possibly say comes out of your mouth, and you make no mistakes. And you walk out of that room and everyone's thrilled to death that you came and that you sold them their product or whatever. You reassured them of something. Or you had to deal with a personal issue. And everyone's happy. My advice is to get out while you're ahead, you know. Get it all straightened out and then say, oh, you know, I'm going to take off now. See you later. Give yourself some breathing space. Give yourself some room for a victory lap, right? Put it in your quiver as your abilities to do something special. There's two hemispheres to the lottery ticket life. People who are trying to sell it to you, and you sell it to yourself. It's going to be probably a hell of a lot easier after this episode for you to see it now. Someone's selling you a one-time situation. A lot of people fabricate these situations, right? Oh, I'm going to tell you about a guy who's made $130,000 in a month. Oh, really? Show me his bank account. Right? And by the way, that ain't that much money in this day and age, right? If you're only going to do it one time, that's not enough money, right? It's better to fight for the big paycheck than to fight for all these little ones. What did Jim Carrey do? He wrote himself a check for $10 million, right? Stuck it in his wallet so he could cash it. I think less than 2 or 3 years later, he was able to cash the check. And it's all bullshit. He didn't cash it, but he keeps it in his wallet and he's shown it to a bunch of people over the last 10 years of interviews, right? Actually, he's probably been doing this since the mid-90s. But when you have to adjust your own lottery ticket winning system, that archetype of, this is why I'm going to succeed, that's a little tougher to catch. So now you're aware. If you weren't aware before, you are aware. The younger you are when you hear this message, the better. If you are a parent or a grandparent and you are engaged in your kid's life and you start hearing these archetypes come out of your kids, try to find a way to let them know that they're going to have to actually put some work in, right? That just because the one guy or one girl made it happen doesn't mean it's going to happen again to them, right? Use a real lottery ticket metaphor like I used in this one, or an example, I should say. I think you feel me. This was a surprise, super warm day. I came out at 10:30 out of my house. And I wore a jacket when I came outside, and I was sweating within 2 seconds. So I popped it off, and I said, look, this is a great day to do an episode. I'm going to do it in the middle of the morning here. I've been up all night, so this is me up probably 20 hours at this point. If you haven't been already, go to deepthoughtsradio.com. From there are all the feeds. They're all the methods of contributing to the show. If you're on video, YouTube is the only channel at this point. Vid.me went out of business. I'll say that a few more times. I will be posting more of season one on the Locked Facebook group. You can get that link from deepthoughtsradio.com at the top. If you're coming in on mobile, it's got that little, you know, the dashes. You click that and it gives you the menu of where you're going. If you'd rather have this in your car as an audio feed, feel free to go on iTunes or Google Play, or simply go to the website and click the appropriate link. There's also just an RSS feed link. There's three little icons that drop onto the screen on your phone. Most phones have some sort of podcast reader. I use Podcast Addict on the Android. If you're on the iPhone, just you're going to get through iTunes. It's an easy way to get it. You will have to download the entire episode if you need to pause, because the website is on a server that is not allowing for you to restart after you pause, at least with Podcast Addict. I can't do that. For those of you supporting me on Patreon, I super duper appreciate it. I am going to start increasing my posting there. There is a Twitter account. I should probably put that up there. It is ran by a close friend of mine who's now part of the show in terms of the administration on the back end. So I've got another person helping out with the actual locked Facebook group. I want to say a big shout out to him. He prefers not to have his name out there. But he is running the Twitter feed. I'm not participating in the Twitter feed, but I guess I could lock into that. I just don't know if I have a heck of a lot of things to say. I think the more you have a single place to find it all, the better. But if you guys, you know, have a big preference for Twitter, do let me know somehow. I did open up the PayPal because some folks requested PayPal. I haven't had anyone use it yet. So, you know, whatever floats your boat, it's cool. I did buy some new audio software this morning that will hopefully help out. I've been using Adobe Audition to record, and what has been going on is the audio will be going fine, and then all of a sudden it turns into this horrible static distortion for, you know, 10, 20 seconds. That's why the last episode had a weird intro, because I had to use the mic off my camera here. So if you ever hear bad audio, it's simply because the computer itself had an issue. But this software is dedicated to nothing but recording audio, and I gave it a big test today, and it seemed to work out beautifully. So I made the switch from Mac back to Windows. I haven't bought a Windows computer since my video game company 10 years ago, so I am absolutely thrilled to death with my my Republic computer, Gamers or Republic of Gamers or whatever. Anyhow, if you made it this far, thanks for listening. Take care of yourself and somebody else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.